This is World Lutheran News Digest, an audio news magazine bringing you a look at significant events in worldwide Lutheranism. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod.
Today on World Lutheran News Digest,
I'm World Lutheran News Digest host Kip Allen. September brings with it the start of a new school year. Some school officials believe that faith and religion must be kept out of all aspects of school life for both students and teachers. Bibles have been confiscated, students forced to remove religious jewelry, and valedictorian speeches censored for mentioning God. But contrary to some officials' belief, students and teachers do not lose their religious freedom simply by entering school grounds. Sometimes officials act out of ignorance, other times from malice. But the faithful are fighting back with education and, when necessary, court action. At the forefront of this effort is the Liberty Institute, a nonprofit law firm dedicated to defending and restoring religious liberty across America. I speak with Justin Butterfield, senior counsel for the Liberty Institute, about freedom of religion in the school.
And now today's Fast Track.
Here's news in brief of interest to Lutherans worldwide. On August 22nd, thousands of pro-life Lutherans and other like-minded people gathered at Planned Parenthood facilities across the nation to join in a national day of protest. The Reverend Dr. Matthew C. Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is again inviting LCMS members to gather September 12th, this time to participate in a day of remembrance for aborted children. The event is planned to take place not just at Planned Parenthood, but also at LCMS churches, schools, homes, and by the gravesides of children who have been aborted. A federal judge has ordered County Clerk Kim Davis to jail for contempt for refusing to issue same-sex marriage licenses on the grounds that to do so violated her religious beliefs. The apostolic Christian and elected Democrat, the Rowan County, Kentucky clerk, appeared before U.S. District Judge David Bunning after consistently refusing to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. Bunning said that he was ordering her to jail because he believed she would not comply with his order to issue the marriage licenses even if she were fined. In her testimony, Davis explained her Christian beliefs and the fact that she was not able to change them. On August 19th, Alvin Osland, executive director of the Norwegian Lutheran Mission, and Halner Boe, Norwegian Lutheran Mission's international department director, came to St. Louis to visit the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and to learn more about the International Lutheran Council. The Norwegian Lutheran Mission was formed in 1891. The Norwegian Lutheran Mission is connected to the revival movements in Norway and adheres to the Holy Scriptures, the ecumenical creeds, the Augsburg Confession, and Luther's small and large catechisms. It has approximately 2,500 chapters across Norway and runs nearly 30 schools from elementary to college level. It further operates more than 40 kindergartens and community centers across the country of Norway. World Lutheran News Digest will be back right after these messages.
Hi, I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Ascension Lutheran in St. Louis.
And I am Pastor Jolly John Lekumsky from St. Paul's in New Athens and Trinity in Darmstadt, and we welcome you to listen to Wrestling with the Basics.
Matt, let go of me, man. No, it's not real wrestling. We're just talking about Bible issues.
No.
Oh, 9:05 Saturday mornings, 8:50 a.m. KFUO.
If you have a question or comment for us at Worldwide KFUO, it's easy to contact us on our website, kfuoam.org. On our homepage, click on Contact Us, where you'll find a map and directions to the station, our telephone numbers, and an online contact form. You can also send an email to our in-studio account, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'd be happy to hear from you today. Thanks for listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkinson, host of Jubilation on Worldwide KFUO. Coming up this Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m., I'm going to be sharing not only great Christ-centered hymns and songs, I'm going to be also providing various scriptures for you all about the subject of a real hope. See, when yours is centered in Jesus totally, then you have a hope with no minus sign attached to it. So join me Sunday for great music and a hope with no minus sign. That's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on Worldwide KFUO.
This is World Lutheran News Digest. ഇത് ലോക ലൂത്രൻ വാർത്താ പരിപാടി ആകുന്നു. യാ വിശ്വ ലൂത്രൻ സമാചാർ ഹേ.
I'm Kip Allen, host for World Lutheran News Digest. With me today is Justin Butterfield. He's a senior counsel with Liberty Institute. Mr. Butterfield, could you tell me a little bit about yourself and about the Liberty Institute?
Well, I'm senior counsel at Liberty Institute, which is the largest law firm in the United States dedicated solely to the restoration of religious liberty in America. And I got my undergraduate degree in electrical engineering, decided I was more interested in government, and I really wanted to be able to defend freedoms that we hold so valuable here in this country. And so I went to law school. I went to Harvard Law School, and I've been working here for over 5 years now defending our religious liberty rights.
What we're seeing right now, sir, is a return to school. This is the start of the new school year. And I think we have all seen in recent years an attack against religious liberty in the school system, specifically aimed against students. But students still have an absolute right, is my understanding, to practice their faith in the schools. Is this the case? And what are their rights exactly?
That's right. So many school officials are confused by this issue because there's really so much misinformation out there. But since 1969, it's been very clear that the constitutional protections of free speech and free religious exercise apply to students in school just as much as it applies to them out of school. In that case, in Tinker versus Des Moines Independent Community School District, the Supreme Court said it can hardly be argued that either students or teachers shed their constitutional rights to freedom of speech or expression at the schoolhouse gate. So they are absolutely as protected in school as they are out of school. And that means that they're allowed to, for instance, share their faith with the students around them. They're allowed to read their Bible in school as long as they're permitted to read other books. They're allowed to talk and pray. They're allowed to do class assignments in a way that reflects their faith as long as it's responsive to the assignment. So, for instance, if the student is asked to answer 2 + 2, they can't respond with Jesus loves you because that's not responsive to the assignment. But if a student is asked to write about your favorite historical figure and they choose to write about Jesus, that is perfectly okay. So they are protected, and students have full protections of their free speech and their free religious liberty in school.
It seems that a lot of times we're being attacked. The organizations are flatly refusing to recognize it. I know, for example, there was one student whose valedictorian speech was censored because he mentioned God in it.
That's right. And again, if the student is chosen to speak for neutral reasons, that is, they're not chosen because of their faith, but they're chosen because they're the valedictorian or captain of the football team or something like that, and they're allowed to write what any kind of speech they want, then they can write about their faith. They can give a speech that talks about their faith, their personal faith, and because that's protected under the First Amendment to the Constitution. So they're allowed to do that, but there is so much misinformation out there that a lot of school officials just don't realize that they're protected, and they try to do things like censor religious content from their messages. And that happens because there are groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation out there that every year send out hundreds, if not thousands, of letters to school districts around the country that are really just scare tactics to scare school officials into denying these students their free speech and their religious liberty rights.
One of the arguments that's made by groups like that is that expression of any kind of religious faith within a public setting, a publicly owned setting, for example, like a school district, constitutes establishment of religion, which, of course, is forbidden by the First. But they are also overlooking, it seems to me, the free expression clause. What is how is this conflict resolved in their mind, and how do we know it applies?
That's right. They really misunderstand the Establishment Clause when they say that. First, they are ignoring that the students have their full rights to the free exercise of their faith and that they have their full free speech rights. And the other thing that ignores is that the Establishment Clause also prohibits hostility to religion. So anything that is setting up a special treatment for religion that is hostile towards religion, for instance, by saying you can say anything you want at graduation except for anything religious, or you can do your homework assignment on any topic you want as long as it's not religious, that's hostility to religion, and that is prohibited by the Establishment Clause, because that would be effectively establishing a state religion of secularism, and that is not allowed.
Are there any court cases specifically related to hostility to religion in church, in schools? Pardon me.
Yes. The Supreme Court has addressed that repeatedly throughout the past few decades. In Lee versus Weissman, the Supreme Court recognized that hostility towards religion is just as bad as if the school were to say, okay, we're going to be a Christian school and we're not going to allow any other faiths. In a there was another case where the court addressed that issue in a slightly different topic, in the discussion of Christmas celebration in public areas, and again they said we can't have a hostility to religion. What we're not trying to whitewash the public sphere of religion. Instead, the government just has to treat everybody fairly, and that means they can't be hostile towards faith.
I remember when I was a youngster, my family lived in a neighborhood that was heavily Jewish. And at our local public school, we had both Christmas celebrations and Hanukkah celebrations. Nobody got upset about that, but I'm not sure that would be allowed today.
You know, it is allowed. Schools can celebrate holidays like Christmas and Hanukkah because those have great cultural value to our country. And in fact, in one case, the court said if we were to remove all celebration of things like Christmas and Hanukkah, or religious music from a choir class, for instance, that would actually not be educating the students because it would not be teaching them about our cultural heritage. So it would actually be doing students a disservice.
There was an incident a few years ago that struck me as the height of absurdity. A marching band wanted to play The Devil Came Down to Georgia. And by golly, some atheist group came up and said that this was somehow a violation of church and state. And they actually had to purge that number from their repertoire.
Yes, it's really just absurd. The arguments from the groups like the Freedom From Religion Foundation that want to completely remove any semblance of any even sort of hint of religion, it is just crazy. For example, we had one case where a student was disciplined because she said, God bless you, when somebody else sneezed in class. I mean, it's just going to absurd. It's really going to the absurd. And that's what Liberty Institute is here to do, is to educate people about what the Constitution really means, what our rights really are, what kind of freedoms we really have, and prevent students from being disciplined for saying, God bless you.
I have to ask, who filed that complaint? It's so absurd, it boggles the mind. Who filed the complaint?
Yeah, well, the student's teacher punished the student, yep. And we had to write a letter to the school explaining that, no, saying God bless you when another student sneezes in class is not prohibited by the Constitution. It's just crazy.
If a student does have his or her religious rights violated in the classroom, how can they contact you, or what can they do to get redress?
Well, they can go to libertyinstitute.org, which is our website, and we have a lot of information about students' rights in school, so they can look through that. And there's also a link that says Request Legal Help. And if they click that, they can send us a message, a little email that explains what's happened to them, and we can look at that, and we can tell them whether their rights have been violated and what they can do about that.
Now, you also have a number of packages that can be downloaded from your website that actually explain the rights of students and to the teachers, explaining to the teachers what these rights are. Is that correct?
That's right. If you go to our website and you click on Issues and then In the School, we have the Student's Bill of Rights, we have the Teacher's Bill of Rights, because teachers also have religious rights in school, which a lot of people don't realize. And you can download these packets that provide all the information. It provides the case sites, and it provides examples of where these have been violated and what the rights of students, parents, and teachers are.
Could you actually provide some examples that are listed in your Bill of Rights where they talk about where the teachers have been violated and the students have been violated?
So some good examples of that are situations in which, at a Columbine High School, students were, as a school project, painting tiles to make a mural on the one of the school walls, and some of the students put little crosses on their tiles or had some sort of religious symbolism, and they were told that their tiles were not allowed to be put on the wall just because they included religious symbols like crosses, while all the other students' tiles were put on the wall. And so that violates those students' rights because they were given a tile and they were said, put whatever you want on this, but the only thing is it can't be religious. And that's the hostility to religion that's not allowed. For teachers, we see all the time school officials who think that teachers are not permitted to mention religion to anybody, when in reality, their rights are fully protected. So when they're talking to other teachers, they can discuss faith all they want, as much as they could talk about, for instance, what movie they saw last night. When teachers are talking to students, if the student brings up the topic of religion, the teacher can engage in that conversation as long as the teacher stops if the student wants to stop. So there are rights that teachers have, and there are much stronger rights that students have, and we see these violated all the time. We see a lot of cases where a salutatorian or valedictorian is giving a graduation speech, and they're told, you know, you can say anything you want as long as there's no mention of God, or you can't pray. We represented a fifth grade student in Florida, Giovanni Rubeo, and he was told by his teacher that he can read any book he wants for free reading time. And he picked up his Bible and he started reading, and the teacher made him give her his Bible and then called his father in front of the class and left a voicemail saying that those books, meaning religious books, are not allowed in her classroom. And again, that is unconstitutional because it's showing a hostility to religion that's just not permitted.
And I assume that you won this case against this person.
Well, in that case, we only had to send a letter, and the school officials realized that was wrong, that was a misunderstanding of the law, and they apologized to Giovanni. The Supreme Court said, if you establish a religion of secularism in the sense of affirmatively opposing or showing hostility to religion, then you're preferring those who believe in no religion over those who do believe. And that is a violation of the Establishment Clause that's just not permitted. And that's what most of these situations that we see are in the form of. They're showing hostility to all religion. And that's not allowed. And it's not what the founders of our country wanted. It's not what the First Amendment requires. And so we're here to really turn that around and to educate people. Because, you know, a lot of school officials are good people who are trying to do the right thing, but they've just been misinformed by groups like the Freedom from Religion Foundation into thinking that they have to whitewash schools. And their understanding of that, influenced by groups like FFRF, are that they have to be hostile towards religion. And that's just not true.
So you're saying essentially the Supreme Court has ruled that secularism itself is actually a religion in the way it functions.
That's exactly right.
I'm looking at, for example, the situation, say, a history teacher who's trying to teach the early colonial period in America. Our early colonists here came here specifically for religious reasons. Would the Religious Freedom from Religion Foundation oppose teaching about the Pilgrims and the Quakers?
Well, I don't know that they would oppose teaching about the Pilgrims or Quakers, but they would probably not appreciate the full extent to which teachers are allowed to teach it. So if you're a teacher and you're teaching a historical subject, you would actually be doing a disservice. You would be not educating your students if you didn't mention the religious reasons that they came to the United States, or at that time not the United States, but came to the New World. So yes, if you're a teacher and you're teaching history, you're certainly allowed to talk about that. Now, a teacher is not allowed to proselytize as a result of that. So a teacher can't say, for instance, we're going to talk about the Pilgrims, and as a result of this, I want to invite you all to church with me. That would not be allowed. But teaching the historical facts about the Pilgrims is absolutely allowed.
And so much of what is the United States today has been based upon our religious foundings. Again, whether the FFA agrees with that or not, the simple fact is so much of our law, of our views, are based on our religious background.
That's exactly right. And that's why, you know, the First Amendment to the Constitution is designed to protect and ensure that we would maintain those religious liberty rights.
And yet these are under attack for whatever reason. I don't understand why they would be criticizing this, why they would be attacking it. I can understand the idea, well, we don't want our teachers to say, you have to be Lutheran, you have to be Catholic. That I understand. What I don't understand is why they are opposed to any kind of mention of religion when it has been so vital to the formation of our nation.
Yeah, I don't understand it either. And that's why I'm working to educate educators about what they are allowed to do so that we won't continue to see this hostility to religion.
Tell me a bit about the history of the Liberty Institute.
The Liberty Institute is the largest law firm that's dedicated solely to restoring religious liberty in the United States. And we represent completely pro bono, so we never charge our clients for anything. But we represent people who have suffered some sort of persecution for their faith. Their religious liberty rights have been violated. We only take religious liberty cases. And so we represent schools. We represent, you know, students in the schools, teachers who've had their rights violated. We represent school districts sometimes, helping them to draft policies that are constitutional so that they can accurately know what the law requires of them, and they won't go into either extreme of either establishing a religion or being hostile towards religion, because so many school districts don't know how to follow that line. We represent churches who are persecuted. You know, right now we're representing some churches down in Houston whose property is trying to be taken by eminent domain for commercial development. So we represent churches who are under attack. We represent just people out in the public sphere trying to live their lives according to their faith. You know, it can be ministries who don't want to provide insurance coverage for abortion. It can be street evangelists who are arrested for sharing their faith. And then we also represent people in the military who are persecuted for their faith, which is really a new area. You know, historically, soldiers, military chaplains have not been persecuted, but we're seeing that more and more, and we're starting to have to represent chaplains who are being punished just for following the requirements of their faith.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is very, very concerned about the situation within the military right now. We have had a long association with the military, providing chaplains to our young soldiers, sailors, airmen, who need this kind of religious and spiritual guidance. And you're quite correct. We have seen military chaplains now under attack. And I'm happy to say the Missouri Synod is taking a stand on it, and organizations such as yours is as well. This has been a very frightening development. These are people who put their lives on the line, and they certainly have spiritual needs and spiritual questions that have to be addressed. And this is not something subject to political correctness.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it really is a shocking indication of where we're going as a country. You know, when I started working at Liberty Institute 5 years ago, we represented a lot of churches and street preachers who were often persecuted, and students who were persecuted by overzealous or misled government officials. But we didn't see the sort of hostility to the very concept of religious liberty that we see today. And the first real glimpse I saw of that new hostility to religious liberty as a concept, was in a case called Hosanna Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church and School, where a Lutheran private school fired a teacher who was a ordained minister, and the teacher sued the school, and the EEOC represented her, and the government, the administration, actually argued before the Supreme Court that the government should be able to apply its civil rights laws to churches in the choosing of their ministers. So that means they were basically arguing, you know, if you want to hire only, for instance, male pastors or priests, then that would be illegal because civil rights laws prohibit discrimination on the basis of sex. Can potentially even extend to this, you not being able to hire on the basis of religion for your Lutheran school, which that was just mind-blowing. And in the government's briefing, they actually argued that the First Amendment only protects belief, that it doesn't protect any sort of expression of that, which thankfully the Supreme Court unanimously rejected that argument, but that the administration was even willing to make that argument shows that we've fallen a long ways in this country in our understanding of religious liberty and what the First Amendment means.
One bright spot I noticed recently, I saw an inspirational movie called God Is Not Dead. And this took place in a college where students were required to start the course by writing the message, God is dead. And one of the students refused to do it. And it was an intriguing expose, I guess is the proper term. It was a very inspirational movie about how this young man stood up for his religious beliefs and actually made his point.
Yep, and you know, that movie was based in part on one of our cases. A student at a college in Florida named Ryan Rotella was told by his professor that he had to write Jesus on a piece of paper, put it on the ground, and stomp on it. And Ryan Rotella refused, and he then went to higher-ups and explained that he didn't want to have to write Jesus on paper and stomp on Jesus, and as a result, the university suspended him. So we had to send a letter to the university explaining, look, you can't suspend students for following their faith. And thankfully, that situation resolved well, but that the school would even think that an appropriate first response was to suspend him for refusing to write Jesus on paper and then stomp on it is really just shocking.
It is indeed, and the situation continues, but we are fighting the good fight, and God willing, we will restore what is needed. I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on World Lutheran News Digest, and please keep up the work. God bless you.
Well, thanks for having me, and God bless you too.
World Lutheran News Digest may be heard every Saturday at 9:30 a.m. and again on Wednesday at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Worldwide KFUO Radio. It may also be heard anytime, streaming online at kfuo.org. Join us again next Saturday for another new edition of World Lutheran News Digest. I'm your host, Kip Allen.
World Lutheran News Digest is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. WLN Digest is produced through the facilities of Worldwide KFUO. You can also listen to WLN Digest on demand at kfuo.org. To correspond with World Lutheran News Digest, email news@kfuo.org.